Hello, football fans. Welcome to the Rodcast. Rod Black with you with another episode. It's Super Bowl week, getting close to the Super Bowl game, Super Bowl 57 between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles. We got the perfect guy to talk to today because a guy who coached in the National Football League, coached in the Canadian Football League. He's a winner. He's a champion. He's very, very thoughtful. You don't want to miss Mark Trestman on the Rodcast.
The Rodcast with Rod Black, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win. Now here's your host, Rod Black.
Well, in the spirit of talking with my good friend and the great coach, Mark Trestman.
Trying to get centered so you can see me. I'm sorry. There we go.
I see you now, and you want to see this. Because we have so much to talk about. The Super Bowl comes on Sunday. But in the spirit of talking with you today, channeling my inner Minnesota Viking.
Yes.
You probably know that I'm a closet Viking fan.
Yes.
And I do know that you are from Minnesota, that you played for the Vikings. Well, you probably love this guy.
I didn't play for them, but I had a chance to.
You had a chance to play, right?
Yeah, I had. But I spent time watching Fran Tarkenton in my younger years.
And look at this.
You know what's an inspiration about Fran is what he's doing with his life. He's still working. He still has a business. I don't know him personally, but I kind of follow him. And I follow him on Twitter, and he's always got great words of wisdom and leadership. And, you know, he was, a special player, that's for sure. One of the greats.
Yeah, he was one of the greats, and I guess maybe I channel it because I grew up in Manitoba, and the Blue Bombers at that time, frankly, weren't that good, so everybody kind of followed this team.
Sure.
And I bring this out every year at Super Bowl because, I think that one of these years, Coach, one of these years, this could happen to this. I honestly thought maybe even this year, the way they were playing, but they're not there.
They're close. You know, mm-hmm. Defensively, they got to pick it up, but they get some personnel on defense, they'll be right there again. I think they're going to be, yearly winners of the North, although the North and the NFC has gotten to be stronger with Detroit coming back. And I think Chicago will be stronger. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Green Bay as long as they have Rodgers. And we don't know whether they will or not. As long as he's playing in the North, there's always a chance Green Bay can win the North as well.
Well, you know all about the North, and I want to talk to you about your time with the Bears and the NFL and all the stories. But let's get to the story this week is Super Bowl. It used to be in January, and now it's in mid-February.
Right.
But it's still the biggest game of the year. You know the showcase. You've been down there. You've been at a Super Bowl before. What does this Super Bowl represent to you this time?
Well, I think it's really there's a new age in football right now with the likes of Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. I mean, I don't think it's a big story. I mean, it might be to some, you know, that there's two black quarterbacks starting in the Super Bowl. I think that is very meaningful to a lot of people that love the game, but it's the style of play that now exists in the NFL through this kind of next gen group. And that's what we're kind of seeing, this next gen group of guys who can really throw the ball in the pocket, but make a big difference with their ability to run the football as well and force defenses to defend against 11 on each and every play as opposed to 10. That's a big, big difference. Somebody's always got to be assigned to the quarterback.
Yeah. Do you see this being a defensive battle? Everybody's talking about Mahomes, the magic man. Everybody's talking about Hurts, the running game of the Eagles. But defense wins championships, and these are two very good defenses, particularly the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this week. We've got, two quarterbacks that can make plays in the pocket. They're going to take care of the football, number one, and they're going to make explosive plays with their talent. But the game's going to be won at the line of scrimmage. And you know, when you watch KC play against Cincinnati a week ago, what they did well was they utilized tight ends and backs and even wide receivers to help on the pass rush of the Cincinnati Bengals, which allows Mahomes to get another click in the pocket, to climb the pocket. He's very good at getting to his flare controls. And then when he gets outside the pockets, you know, that's where he's so dangerous, making these magical, awkward throw plays. So But they're playing against a pass rush. They have got the best pass rush probably since 1984. They've got four dominant pass rushers. They're game wreckers, each one of them. Seldom does a team have four game wreckers on the line of scrimmage. They do with multiple sack players. So, I give Philadelphia a little bit of the edge because of their ability to run the football. And if they can run it and keep the play keep away from Mahomes. But Mahomes only needs about 20 minutes and he can put four touchdowns up. Yeah. So it's like you can go back and forth and the positives. I mean, they got to, Kansas City's got to stop the run when they do. A.J. Brown is sitting out there by himself. You know, same thing. It's really about, I think the difference making in this game will be Mahomes, his ability to make four or five plays outside of the pocket. Otherwise, I think Philadelphia has, I don't know what the line is. Philadelphia.
I think it's close. It's a close game. It's almost, it was a pick 'em earlier. I think it's a 1-point game, 1.5 right now.
Yeah, and I would give the edge to Philadelphia because they can own the line. The third factor besides turnovers and explosive is who's going to win the line of scrimmage. Well, the strength of both teams is Philadelphia's offensive line, which is dominant, and their defensive line, which is dominant. And you don't see that very often where both sides of the ball on one team can be dominant, but Philadelphia has that, and that has to give them the edge.
You have seen so much in your time as a coach. I know humbly, and sometimes a lot of people say that you are the quarterback whisperer. You have been around so many great ones. You have been around them. You've coached them. You've been a coordinator at so many teams. You've been with Kosar and Gannon and Plummer and Anthony Calvillo and others, just the long list of quarterbacks. Where does Patrick Mahomes rank and how unique of a quarterback is he?
Well, he's different. I don't know that. I think Andy Reid's done a tremendous job and Eric Bieniemy's done a different job of saying, we got this guy and he's just intangibly gifted to an extent that you see discipline in what Mahomes does, but then you see these off-platform plays that you just can't coach, that he just makes happen. So he is... I've never coached a quarterback like him. I don't think anybody has but Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, quite frankly.
Would he be tough to coach in your mind?
I think that it would, from my standpoint, I want to be able to sit in a meeting and say, here's your drop, here's your read, and here's your progression. And you do see that with Mahomes. You saw him against in the AFC Championship game. I mean, he'll finish progressions to backs and tight ends and wide receivers if he has time. But there's also this moment where he has a feel for the game that is probably a cut above almost any guy to ever play the game. And there's been brilliant quarterbacks all the way around. But I think it's easier to coach a Brady, a Gannon, a Ricky Ray, a Calvillo, whoever that might be along the way, because you can sit in a meeting and say, it's 1, 2, 3. If you get to 4 and 5, you're going to the Hall of Fame and be ready to run and make a couple of plays with your legs. Somewhere in that meeting room, they found that, that give and take, which allows Patrick Mahomes to just be this poet, on the field and create lyrics that have never been seen before, but now you're seeing more quarterbacks. Gannon was great at awkward throws. This is another level with what Mahomes can do athletically, with his arm talent and with the way he throws the ball.
Yeah, and on one ankle as well. And he is poetry. I love what you said, poetry in motion in so many ways. I love the story, though, of Jalen Hurts in many ways. When you think about, go back when he was with Saban, when he was the guy. And I became a Jalen Hurts fan, actually, when Tua Tagovailoa came in and won that championship. A lot of guys could have wilted, but he showed great grace at the end of that game. He had to. And now, of course, he transferred after. But you look at that draft class, Joe Burrow won. Tagovailoa goes Love, Herbert. Jalen Hurts went 53rd overall to Philadelphia. I don't know if the Eagles even thought that he would be around. I love this story, and I love the way he plays.
Well, I think that when I look at Jalen, I kind of think of Josh Allen.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of Jalen Hurts in college because I'm not a big at watching a lot of college football. But the exponential growth as a quarterback he's made over 3 years is very similar to Josh Allen. I was at Cleveland's training camp when they practiced against Philadelphia, and I was blown away by his accuracy and his arm talent. We've just seen that growth over 3 years. Everybody you talk to there said he's a tremendous leader in the locker room. He owns the locker room, but it's his accuracy. You know, just like the Josh Allen was not an accurate passer in college, and he really wasn't in his first year. Now, there's some things that are going on in Buffalo that have to be corrected, but over 3 years, Josh Allen has, you know, grown to be one of the great players and accurate throwers in the league, and you can say the same thing about Jalen. He gets the ball up and out very quickly. It's very natural, and he gets a lot of one-on-one coverage because they got to stop the run, and with that offensive line, you know, he's got the ability to do both, to stand in there and make plays, and they do a great job. They don't have a great drop-back game. They don't need it. They have a movement game. They have a great running game. They have a play-action game, so they don't drop back and throw the ball a lot, but when they do and he's got time to throw, he's very accurate.
I'm curious how you watch the Super Bowl. I would love to be at your place watching with you. I'd like to, first of all, be at the game, but I cannot afford that ticket. I think it's like 10 grand or something. I'd love to call the game, clearly. I would love, though, to watch it with somebody like you. Now, do you even have a Super Bowl party? Do you have like chili and chips and stuff like that? Or do you watch it as a coach?
Yeah, I've been at places where it's really noisy. And, you know,
I don't like watching games like that.
You know, what honestly happens is people think you have all the answers. If you're a coach in the room at a party, a Super Bowl party, everybody, you know, you kind of are, you know, takes, you don't want it, but you're kind of taking, you know, center stage. So it's better to just watch it alone. And what I've gotten interested in after being a head coach for 10 years is watching what goes on game management wise. And I just don't think people realize how hard it is to manage a game, particularly in the middle eight and at the end of the game. And most coaches now do have analysts up there that are taking control of timeouts, when to use them. You know, there's 3:10 left in the game. We should use one now. You know, those types of things that we didn't have. Early in my career as the offensive coordinator, not even as a head coach, I was calling timeouts in 2 minutes. That's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. And as I've always told teams, you know, timeouts are zirconium until the last 2 minutes. Then they become precious diamonds. So we got to save them when we can. You know, we can't take timeouts for a delay a game, you know, because the ball's on the minus 40-yard line in the first quarter. We got to take the five. We can't waste the diamond. Right. So I kind of been watching it more from a game management standpoint and just, you know, from a 30,000 view, foot view, and just watching it in general. It's kind of hard to watch it for the enjoyment because you are kind of playing the game. But I've tried over the years to get better at just enjoying the day like everybody else.
So you're not putting any prop bets on the coin flip? What's that? Or watching? Are you curious? Do you watch the halftime show? Are you going to watch Rihanna? Are you going to see, you know, if she sings Umbrella?
I'm curious about the commercials, like everybody else.
And you know the saddest. I don't know if sad, but the commercials are already out there. Do you know what that? Like you can watch them, and I know they come on during the game, and I'll laugh again. But it's almost like opening gifts before Christmas or your birthday. I wish they kind of just save them for the day.
I think we get off the social media and YouTube and we just wait it out. But I watch it. I mean, I'll look forward to it. Yeah, I look forward to just taking it all in. It's a great day for football and the world kind of comes together. It's not just America. The world kind of comes together for a few hours and, you know, enjoys, you know, this is two great teams. They're the two teams that deserve to be in there, you know, arguably anyways. And it should be a heck of a game.
No, you know what it's like to be around big games, Super Bowls, Grey Cups. You're, in my mind, one of the greatest minds I've ever been around for this sport and life, too, because you are truly a life coach in many ways to a lot of people. I do want to ask you though about some of the other stories in the NFL. Clearly, you talked about the GOAT, Tom Brady. He's top of mind for everybody. It clearly looks now that he is done. He is absolutely retired. And I hate to put my CFL hat on sometimes and compare the two leagues, because sometimes you can't, but it's still football. But, you know, you coach some GOATs. You coach, you know, CFL GOATs and Ricky Ray and Anthony Calvillo. Is there any kind of similarity that you have found between what Brady has done, beyond the fact he's won so many championships, yeah, and he's Benjamin Button? I don't know how old he is now, but the guy lives forever. Any similarities that you found between the greatness that you've coached and watching, yeah, Tom Brady?
Yeah, I think one thing we got to give Brady credit for that's different, let's say, a Ricky Ray and Anthony Calvillo, who I still, and I've always said, if they were in the right place at the right time in the NFL, they could have accomplished the same things because of their accuracy, their football intelligence, their quick-mindedness. They had all the tools. But what Brady's done is he's retired when he can still play. I mean, he can still throw it. He can still move. He's still accurate. He has the competitive fire to do it. And he quit for family. Hmm. And I mean, it's very evident that he just said, I don't want to play in Tampa, and I'm not going to be playing in Miami, but Miami's where my children are. And really, over the last 23 years, I haven't been the father I want to be. And that's missing in my life. So I think we got to give him so much credit for retiring. Because there isn't a team in the NFL that wouldn't take him right now and pay him $50 million to play next year. And notwithstanding that, he's given it up for family. You know, I think Ricky and Anthony, you know, decided that enough was enough. And they wanted to move on. But I think certainly for family reasons, but for different reasons as well, they just felt they couldn't compete at the same level. But, you know, comparing them, it's easy to compare them. Great leaders in the locker room, team first, players, always seems to say the right things. Tough, you know, on the field, courage, toughness. You would love to coach him because they love football as much as you do. And as a quarterback coach, I didn't want to walk into a room where the quarterbacks didn't love football as much as me. It was just unacceptable. And I didn't want to walk into a room where the quarterbacks didn't have the ultimate confidence that I was going to prepare them at the highest and most elite level. And I think that's who all those three guys are. They would be unnerved if you walked into a meeting room and you weren't prepared game plan wise, and you weren't passionate about the game plan, and you weren't relentless about wanting to teach and coach them and know that they needed to know that you were doing it for them. And you needed to know that they were doing it for their team, that the team came first. And these are three really selfless guys. If we're talking about Ricky and Anthony and Tom Brady, they were selfless because the team always came first.
Yeah. Tom has probably another 300 million reasons, I think, you know, signing a TV deal as well.
Right.
I do believe that family. Would you be surprised, though, because we were down this road before and everybody said, you know, he's going off, yep, to the sunset. Would you be surprised if, for some reason, he wakes up one day and misses it again and comes back? Or do you think this is it?
Well, I think this is what all people do when they've been elite their whole life, mm-hmm, is they're addicted to their jobs.
Like you are?
100%. Yeah, and it's very difficult. You see it with players when they move on. They're addicted to all the things that the game, you know, when you're a hyper-competitive personality disorder, basically, you're always drawn back to it, right? But I think Tom Brady is done. And I think that he's, you know, decided that it's not that he put his family first, put his family second, but I think he's all in on the next stage of his life. And I don't think, I would be shocked, not surprised, but shocked if he comes back.
We're going to talk a little bit about the GOAT and go to somebody who I'm sure most people in the United States have never heard of, but we in Canada have heard of Nathan Rourke and what he did with the BC Lions in a rookie year. He now signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars, will play behind Trevor Lawrence under a great coach. What have you seen? And I know you're such a fan. You don't watch a lot of NCAA ball, you say, but I know you watch a lot of CFL and I know you watch a lot of pro ball. What have you seen from Nathan Rourke, and can he make it?
Oh, I think he can, because he's accurate and he can move. And he's got high character and he's got football intelligence. It's very, I've had people disagree, but it's tough to play quarterback in the CFL.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you've played your whole life on a regulation south of the border.
Field. Yeah, ask all the NFL guys, coach, who've come up north and found it very humbling. Very humbling.
Well, humility has to be the number one quality, in my opinion, of any coach or any player who comes to Canada. You know, if they think they got it down or they're better than what, you know, I've said this my entire career, that, you know, if you're not humble coming to Canada, you're not going to be there very long. You know, the game is going to beat you up because you're going to think you can do it better, or the game. You know, I've talked to a number of coaches who've tried, and they call me and they say, why do we do this? Why do we do that? I said, it takes 3 or 4 years someone to understand why, but the game's all tied together. It's a beautiful game. And but if you question the rules and you question why we're a yard off the ball, or you question why the field's so wide, or you're just going to wear yourself out. And you're going to turn around and either the game's going to deny you or you're just going to give up on it. But Rourke,
one guy, I think
Rourke, just for a minute. I mean, he's got size. He's got good size. He's got excellent arm talent. He's got spatial awareness, which I think is really important. You know, by that, I mean, he can see things. Brock Purdy has this. He has spatial awareness. He can see where the players are and know where the location should be. And that's really important for quarterbacking. I mean, when you think about what a quarterback does, his eyes, the ability to play in chaos with things running around him, depth perception, changing ball speeds, the type of ball, you know, and arc on a ball and the way things are put together, very few can do it. Rourke has all the tools. I think he's in a really good spot. I hope that Henry Burris stays there. I think he can help him with the transition. I think that would be big, and that might have been a big part of why Nathan Rourke went there. I don't know if Henry will still be with the team this year. He may be moving on, but I think that would help him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he is a talent. He's got such great confidence, too. You know, people who haven't seen the Canadian game or are new to it will realize that, you know, what you're seeing in the NFL now is kind of what a hybrid was of the CFL. I mean, the passing, the ball in the air all the time. And one quarterback that I always thought, if he ever had to come north, if he ever did, was Russell Wilson, would be an incredible CFL quarterback. Struggled this year. New coach in Denver, though. What do you think Sean Payton will do with Russell Wilson?
Well, I wrote it. I do some writing for the 33rd team. Website, and I wrote about this. This is everything Russell could ask for. Mm. He played in a system that wasn't a system a year ago. He didn't have the coaching he's going to get now. I mean, you know, Sean knows exactly how to do it. The playbook's already in play. You know, he's had success. He coached a quarterback very similar in size and arm talent and accuracy and intangibles in New Orleans for 15 years. So this is just a natural, this is really a football marriage made in heaven. I don't see how it can fail. It can't fail because the defense is already in place. They'll be more than sufficient. If they can stay healthy, they had a lot of injuries last year. They lost their left tackle. They lost their running back. They lost Patrick. Judy only played part of the year. But if Cortland Sutton and Patrick and Judy and Hamler and Javon Williams and Bowles comes back, this is a no-brainer because Russell's already proved he can go head-to-head against Justin Herbert and Mahomes. He did it this year. They just didn't come out on top. But he went to the West to play against the best, and he's going to get his chance, and now he's got the ammunition of he's going to have great coaching. And if the players on offense are healthy, I think it's a no-brainer. Denver will be right there. They'll be in a playoff hunt next year.
I know you're doing a lot of teaching and coaching, life coaching. I know you're busy with writing and everything else. You're a busy guy. I know you like to golf. I love golf with you. How much do you miss the game, though? How much do you miss the sideline? How old are you now? 67?
67.
You're 67. A young 67, and you got a lot left in you. You're not done coaching, right?
Well,
you're going to be back on the sideline somewhere, somehow?
Yeah, I'm not pursuing it. I'm leaving it out there. You know, it's not really game day that I miss. I miss the meetings. I miss the teaching. You know, I always looked at a football season as a 180-day journey.
You don't miss the media and idiotic questions from guys like me. You don't miss me.
Media is not your friend, page one, whatever it is in the book. But no, obviously the media is so important to the game. We all know that. And I always told players that we have to have the media there, our conduit to fans, you know, and so it's really important. But it's the day-to-day teaching of leadership, how to be better fathers and husbands and teammates, how to treat, having two daughters, how to treat women, what a real man looks like, not looks like, but sounds like, the actions of a man, what it really is all about, and really understanding and the empathy and knowing the narratives of players, how they grew up, so I can understand who they are, so I can bring out the best of them, not only on the field, but in life. And so, you know, football season was 180-day journey, a leadership course. And the competency of teaching football allowed me to do that, you know, allowed me to have their attention. And the meetings were the biggest part, is showing how we're all interconnected and interdependent on each other in life, in community, and on a team. And we're all part of a single, you know, as Martin Luther King said, we're all part of a single garment of destiny, you know, and that's really what we are in life. And that's what a football team is. They can't do it. You can't do it without the person next to you being at his best. And that's inspirational leadership. It's not motivational coercion. And that's why I love the game, because you have this, you know, this experiment every year of bringing people together and getting them to understand that they belong to each other. And the only way they can have success if they're at their best. And then that creates wanting it for your teammate more than yourself. It's all those things that we think are pie in the sky. But when you've experienced them with teams and players experience it, then there's this exponential, you know, spread of wisdom that goes to them, their families, their children, their children's children. And that's, you get to do that at a massive exponential level, because you got 100 people in the room every morning to send the message.
Yeah, your record speaks for itself and your leadership. And has your perspective changed, though, as you've gotten older, as you've gone through your experiences as a coach? Go back, you know, the old thing, the letter to your younger self, the young Mark Trestman who was trying out with the Vikings, who was coaching in college, who you know, was in the NFL as an assistant coach, then in the CFL as a coach, and the NFL as a head coach, and then in the CFL as a coach, winning Grey Cups, doing this, going to the XFL. One of the great quotes I've ever heard from you, and I've stolen it. I've used you, I've attributed you, is that adversity is an opportunity. Has that helped you in this journey to also paint that canvas for the people that you are talking to?
Yeah, I don't know how much time we have, Rod. I don't want to go unfiltered here, but
for you, all day.
In my leadership course, the first day is everybody tells they have 5 minutes. Tell your leadership story. Your leadership story is your narrative. It's the people, places, coincidences, influencers you've had throughout your life. And that's your leadership story. And everybody has one. So I can tell you this, I would have never been the coach I was in Montreal, not just because I had Anthony, but, and I say this all the time, when people introduce you, when you speak, they always, and you know this, they always tell you, they tell everybody of your accolades, of what your Grey Cups, your wins, people you've coached. But the real value I think I have is the adversity I've gone through in my life, getting fired, moving 12 times. But in 2004, 2005, when we got fired in NC State, where I thought I was going to finish my coaching career, and I had 2 years left on my contract, somebody said, you got to do your narrative. I go, what's a narrative? Well, your narrative's your leadership story. So I went through my life chronologically. And what I came to the conclusion is because I, even though I had, you know, perceptive success prior to NC State, I never felt fulfilled. And the reason I didn't, because I was transactional. It was always about me. It was selfish. It was title. It was money. It was peer group adulation. And I realized how offensive that looked and sounded. My lack of my blind spots, my lack of self-awareness, my imposter syndrome, all the things that I was that I went, man, that's not who I am in my heart. And I went through a major transformation of who, you know, building a mission statement, recreating my purpose. And when I went to Montreal, you know, my heart was completely in the right place. I wanted to prove I could be a head coach and not the perceived accountant that I looked like on the sideline. And I wanted to show that where my heart was to teach and to lead men and women and do it transformationally for them, not for me. My purpose was to serve them, not to serve me, and focus totally each and every year on being the best team that we could be and never thinking about what would happen afterwards. And because of, you know, the interdependency and interconnectivity of, you know, Alexia Calvillo being in remission and telling her husband, you can continue to play, you know, my life changed forever.
And really? So did at that time?
At that time, because if, let's say Anthony Calvillo would have stayed, God forbid, you know, would have had to stay home with Alexia.
Yeah.
What kind of tenure would I have had in Montreal without an Anthony Calvillo? Mm-hmm. You know, it would have been, I may have affected a lot of lives and gotten a lot of satisfaction, but there's no way we could have won the way we won and how we won. And the talent that was already in the locker room at the time, the Jamal Richardsons, the SJ Greens, the, you know, all the Watkins, the Ben Cahoons, Avon Coburns, you know, these guys love football and just wanted to play the game. So it was the universe. But, you know, I think you can bring the universe to you with the right purpose, the right mission, you know. And for me, it was all in place. It was well thought through. My intentions were not for me, but for them. And that's what leadership is. Leadership has nothing to do about you. It's all about the people. And I spent a lifetime making the task more important than the people. And when I got to Montreal, the people became the most important thing. And when you have the people, the tasks become a lot easier. And
that must have been different for you, huh? Again, you've been all over, but then you come to a foreign country. I mean, it's to Canada. There's just, you know, different laws. We got toonies, and you probably got to know a lot about Tim Hortons at the time. And yeah. You know, the French language, which was predominant as well within the city of Montreal. But I remember how you embraced the culture. I remember sitting down and chatting with you one time and how much you really loved the joie de vivre of Montreal.
Everything, you know, I mean, I was fortunate even, you know, I'd found a place to live, which was kind of closer to the stadium. And I went to sign the lease. And she said, no, you can't do it for whatever reason. And all of a sudden I looked on the internet and there was a place available and it was right down on St. Paul and St. Pierre, right in the heart on the cobblestone streets. And it couldn't have been better, you know, because when I went home, taking walks, going by, you know, going down to the river, just people watching, you know, when my family came in, you know, we were able to embrace the environment. And just walking up the hill for games, you know, just taking them, you know, leaving early at a place for breakfast. Then I'd walk up the hill. I'd always walk back. You know, when my wife was there, we'd walk back together. I was by myself a lot. I'd walk back and just taking it all in and just realizing how lucky I was to have this journey. This portion of my journey was really the coolest time and really has become a second home.
Yeah, back-to-back Grey Cup champions in Montreal. Again, you talk about the wins. You coached so many great players. I want to chat a little CFL with you if I can, and I want to come back to your time in Chicago. I know we haven't got much time. I love talking with you. Sorry. The Montreal franchise, and actually the Canadian Football League, I know you keep on top of everything. And the fact that they're still kind of seeking ownership, there's still a big question mark over top of that franchise. In fact, there's always been a question mark around the big markets in Toronto, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver. What have you gleaned watching now from the south, watching the game from the north, in terms of what's going on in Montreal and the landscape of the Canadian Football League?
Yeah. Well, my first thing is I was very disappointed that Anthony Calvillo didn't become the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes, and that's no reflection on Jason. Mm-hmm. I think Jason's a heck of a coach, and I think he, you know, when they get started, he's going to do a great job. He learned from his previous. He's a decorated veteran of the league. I just felt Anthony was ready. People don't know what Anthony's like when he gets in front of the team like I do. He didn't get in front very often, but when he had the floor, he dominated. He had everybody's ear. He's a great champion. He's a great leader. I think he's coached long enough. And to be the head coach in Montreal, I really believe he should have had the job without question. I'm really disappointed about it. I'm not following the ownership situation. It appears there's a lot of turmoil going on. You know, Montreal is just a great football city. You know, we know hockey's number one. That's undeniable. But my time there, you know, the stands were full. People love their team. They embrace
their team. Game nights were incredible, Coach.
Incredible. I mean, Friday, you know, whether it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whatever it was, I mean, you know, going up on the mountain and playing games, I mean, I'm just hopeful they get it right. I don't know all the details. I don't know the complications. But on that issue, you know, that's all I can really say. You know, I wanted to be honest and give my opinion about, I'm glad you asked about Anthony. And again, I think Montreal should embrace Jason, you know, when the season starts, because he's a good coach and a really good person, and he'll do a great job. I had my fingers crossed for Anthony. Mm-hmm.
I know that, as usual, there's always the offseason quarterback shuffle up in Canada too. Cody Fajardo looks like he's going to go to Montreal. Trevor Harris is going to end up in Saskatchewan. Something that you always kind of see, something you never thought you'd see. Bo Levi Mitchell, not in a Calgary Stampeders uniform. And say what you want, what's going to happen in Hamilton with Bo Levi Mitchell, but here is a future Hall of Famer and a guy who has broken almost every record beyond Anthony Calvillo's in the right. CFL record book.
Well, first of all, I'm a fantastic quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many comparisons. I mean, Joe Namath went to the LA Rams and Joe Montana went to Kansas City. And, you know, these guys are Hall of Fame players. And those are just two examples. There's 20 of those where, you know, Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay. So, you know, quarterback
and won a Super Bowl.
So some of the guys didn't do well. Other guys did. I mean, Aaron Rodgers may leave. He's still in the prime of his career, and we'll see what he does. So it's just not unusual. It just doesn't look right to see. And I never looked right to see Joe Namath playing for the Rams or Joe Montana with a Kansas City Chief helmet on. But, you know, they still can play. You know, I love the quarterback in Calgary. I think he's a tremendous player. And, you know, those are tough decisions for Dave Dickinson and for Huff. You know, those I'm sure was a very difficult decision. I wasn't in the room, but, you know, they made a decision. And, you know, Bo Levi is a guy who's a great leader. He's got good arm talent. I didn't see him play a lot this year. None of us did. But I look forward to seeing, you know, how he plays next year.
I want to ask you about your time in Chicago. You went from, you know, this incredible glory that you achieved in Canada. Then you go back to, I mean, I would assume a dream job. I mean, the National Football League, to become a head coach, very few get a chance to do that. And in your first year, yeah, I think you were 8-8, you know, great start to the season. I want to ask you about your time there.
Yeah.
And what you took from Canada to the National Football League, because you eventually came back to Canada again.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think what people didn't realize when I got to Chicago that I coached in the NFL for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know? And so when I went to Canada, you know, in a different offense that looks like most of the offense right now in the NFL.
Yeah.
But just getting back to Chicago. When I saw Zach Taylor the other day on the sidelines, and I knew he had only won 6 games in 2 years, it really hurt because we were so deficient defensively the 2 years I was there. And the signing of Jay Cutler took the money away from the defense. But what I really learned is you need alignment. You need alignment between ownership, general manager, and the head coach. The culture of the team is the head coach, regardless of ownership, regardless of the general manager. The culture and the values of the head coach are what the locker room becomes. And we were headed in the right direction, but I made some mistakes, which I wish I could have another opportunity, or wish I could have had another opportunity to clean up some of the mistakes I made. And I always have held myself accountable. You know, nobody got me fired but me. And as I look back, there's some things I could have done to make it better, but I wasn't aligned with ownership. They didn't understand the culture I was trying to build.
A tough market too. Really tough market.
It's, you know, it's the toughest. I mean, there's, when you have a press conference, there's 120 people every day there. And of course, everybody's got to take a position, right? And everybody's got, they've got people whispering in their ears. I went to a team where the head coach should have never been fired. Lovie Smith was 10-6 and he got fired. And there were a lot of players on that team that I took over that were very upset about it and were, you know, intransigent, so to speak. They just had an unwillingness to accept the changes. I opened the locker room up. But they knew I was competent, and a lot of guys got it, but I wasn't there long enough to create the wave I needed to create to bring everybody aboard. If Aaron Rodgers wouldn't have converted four fourth downs in the last game of the season, we would have had a home game against San Francisco, and that could have changed everything. The other thing I didn't do is I didn't fire Mel Tucker after the game, and everybody wanted me to do that. And that's what head coaches do today. They just fire the coordinators to protect their $8 million a year jobs. And I thought that was wrong based on the talent we had. And so I refused to fire Mel Tucker. If I would have fired Mel and hired Wade Phillips, I might have gained another year to be able to clean up some of the things that we needed to do and get some guys out of the locker room. But, you know, I get off a plane and my daughter lives in Chicago and works there. I get off a plane, I run into people. The people in Chicago couldn't be more gracious and appreciative of what we were trying to do. And I always say you can always look at an organization after you leave and see how they did. And since I left, they've had four or five coaches and they've never been able to clean it up. And hopefully they will, because the Chicago fan base deserves that. But we needed another year. I thought we had done enough. We were at one point, we were 13-13, Rod, which is the same record that Ditka had and George Halas had. And we had a bad run of five games. And Pete, that, you know, I always say the barber got in the owner's ear and they decided to make it, you know, hastily make a change. And I think they made a mistake. And I think history has proven that they didn't give me the year that I deserved. But I also made some mistakes that I had to have to hold myself accountable for.
Yeah, you know, the game's about relationships, and you know, it's the friendships and relationships again. I know your guy Brandon Marshall. I saw him this week. Did you see him at the press conference with Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah,
that was great. It said that Rihanna basically pranked him, but I know that Brandon was recently with you. Is that correct?
Yeah, Brandon came. Brandon's, you know, Brandon is probably one of the players I've been closest to in my career, and I've been close to a lot of them, but. You know, he came in with you know, open to mental illness. He has borderline personality. You know, we worked together to try to grow his platform. He led our leadership class last week. I'll put some of that on social media. We're going to put some out this. We already put a little bit out on Instagram
through at Coach Tressman.
At Coach Tressman, or at the University of Miami Instagram account. Okay. It really starts there. And he did a tremendous job of leading our class and holding a cohort, and he's doing some great things in business. He's got a tremendous podcast, I Am Athlete. He's a brilliant young man, and he's doing, you know, a lot of good things for the mental health community.
Yeah. And he's a big fan of Rihanna. That was well, quite funny. I thought it was really good. Not much time here. I know you're very proud of your cups, but getting to know you as I have the last couple of years, I think, you know, the most proud you are of, is your family and your kids. And how difficult has it been to become a head coach? It's such a consuming job. I even think an assistant coach is really consuming. All the video you have to watch in every sport. But how difficult has it been? But beyond the championships, how proud of you are of what the accomplishments from your family?
Well, that's the thing that I'm most proud of. I mean, I've got two daughters that are grown women now, that are doing all the right things and working hard. And it has not been easy. I mean, for 12 years, they lived in 11 different houses. I have to give, an entire credit to my wife and the woman who raised them, because she spent most of the time. I did the best I could. But, the CFL was a blessing. And Bob Whitenhall was a blessing, Rod, because he let me go home in December. And my kids got a chance to go to junior high and high school in Raleigh, North Carolina. They have longtime friendships. It solidified their childhood. And I got to spend a lot of time from December until May, shuttling them around, traveling to their events, being part of their lives. So I really got to make up for a lot of years in the last 5 or 6 years they were in our house. And I'm just really proud of them, that they're, the opportunity to grow up in locker rooms gave them a sense of and experiences that I don't think a lot of kids had a chance to do. And thank God it, up till now, it's worked out to be, added a lot of value to their lives.
Where do you keep your Grey Cup rings? What have you done with them? Where do you, you don't wear them out or anything? Like, well, next time we go golfing, I know you can't fit it over your golf club, but I mean, where do you keep them? And impossible question to answer, but is there one that is more special than the other?
You know what? They're in a box, in a safety deposit box. I have never worn any of them other than the day we got them.
Wow.
I'll probably have to figure out how I'm going to divide them up. I'm trying to find a reason to wear them. A lot of guys wear them when they speak and they do other things. But to me, when I speak, the focus is always on the adversity, because the adversity allows you to have all the things that they tell you you are when they introduce you.
Well, when you come for your Hall of Fame induction speech, that's when you can wear them.
Well, that,
you're going to get there.
I would be an imposter to say that I'm hoping that I'll get consideration based on those that are in there. I'll let people decide whether I'm worthy of that, because I don't really have the perspective that people that are involved in those areas. There's no one that is more. I don't really think about it like that. My prayer to start of the season was to be to stand off the podium with my family and watch my players celebrate and my coaches celebrate. And those are gifts. That's the real memory of just being able to stand back, watch them celebrate in the locker room. And then finally, being a head coach is a gift, because in every locker room, I was able to tell them, let's be quiet for a minute. Come over here. Let's remind ourselves that we are now on a mission in life, is to share not the result of what we accomplished, but how we did it. And we have an obligation now as champions to send a message to our children and the people that enter our airspace, that process, living in the moment, doing for others, got us here. It wasn't one play or one game. And that was always the moment that I always tried to intentionally think about at the start of the season, was being able to bring them together, say a prayer, and remind them that the reason why we were the best team is because the team we played brought out the best in us. We never demonized them and we never anointed them. We respected them, and because we respected them, we're here with the cup. And now we have an obligation to send the messages that we learned to others.
Great trophy, though. Tell me deep inside you, though. That must have felt like a little kid when you got that. Because that is, it truly, for those watching or listening in the United States and haven't seen the CFL or the Grey Cup, the Grey Cup may be the world's best people's trophy. And to just get that, I mean, first time you probably saw it, you probably went, okay. But when you get it a couple more times, it's such a cool chalice.
You know, probably the regret would be I never took it down south, never shared it with friends or family. And I don't know why, it just never happened.
They got your rings in a box somewhere, for God's sake.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's really about the people.
Yeah.
It's all about the people and the lives you can change and the experience and the so-called wisdom, you know, through experience. You know, the fact that I was transactional and selfish for 50 years of my life has allowed me to do things after 50 in the second half that I would have never done without, you know, tasting my blood, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And seeing the world from a completely different perspective. So I'm grateful for getting fired at NC State because it bought me time to transform myself into changing a lot of lives because of it.
I hate to say this. I'm glad you got fired too, because you know, I never would have had a chance to be around one of the great coaches. I will tell you, as a reporter or an announcer, I learned so much every time we got a chance to sit down or watch you play, and now getting a chance to know you as a just a dude who plays golf occasionally. But understanding that inner Mark Trestman, and I want to let you reflect on what I think is the ultimate quote, and it's from the book of Trestman, and it's, "What I do for myself stays within me. What I do for others lasts a lifetime."
Yeah,
those are profound words.
Yeah, that was Albert Pike, and it was really the only. I didn't have any quotes on the wall. I didn't believe in quotes because mm-hmm. I think that. You know, and I don't believe putting values up on the wall. I mean, you have to sell your values with different messages.
It has to come from the heart, right?
Right. So like my, you know, for the listener out there, I would suggest that, you know, everybody should intentionally think about what their values are. So mine are humility, trust, respect, joy, and love. So I don't mean love like you love your partner. I'm talking about love as not as an emotion, but I've got your back. You won't meet the enemy when you come to the sideline. When you fail, I'm going to pick you up because I know you care. That kind of love. Joy being gratitude and selflessness. The others speak for themselves. So those are the guardrails. Like in our locker room, nobody disrespected anybody. You know, if there was noise and somebody made it about themselves.
How did you ever handle that stuff?
By showing them how what they did mattered. Mm-hmm. That by showing them, and that's the fun of coaching, is every day you get in front of a group and you say, this guy is connected to this guy. The guy who cleans the helmets is just as important as the quarterback, and you show them why. And then because you know their narrative and their values, you know how to reach them. Because the message you send on Monday is the same message you're going to send on Thursday. It's no different. We're all interconnected, but mm-hmm. It's illustrated differently because, you know, he understands what I did on Monday, but on Monday he rolled his eyes because he goes, what the hell is Mark talking about? Right. Mm-hmm. So on Thursday, you're sending the same message, but because you know the player, you can create the message that says the same thing, but you sell it a different way.
Mm-hmm. Great messages, great words. Great coach, greater man, by the way, much greater
well, it's
man.
All about
I do have one little thing that I don't like about you. You only started playing golf how many years ago?
This will be the start of my third year.
That's crazy. Folks, Mark Trestman in 3 years, I'm not saying he's ready for the tour or the senior tour or any tour, but I can tell you right now, the guy, and maybe that you've gotten that from coaching or listening or watching or analyzing, but the dude can play. Like you can play. Like when I first went out with him, I said, well, 3 years, usually, you know, you're kind of picking balls out of the woods or, you know, like, and dang, can you just once in a while, like just, if you get a six, can you just say you got a four? Can you just do what the rest of us do? Like kick your ball out of the woods. You're way too honest, but I kid you. I kid you. Your development in golf is astounding in 3 years.
Well, this will be the start of my third year. It's not a full three.
Wow.
But I've learned all the excuses.
You don't really have that much else to do, right? You can play golf all the time.
Well, I'm going to go out today and play.
There you go.
I try to play. If I'm not playing, I'm practicing. I do love the game.
Yeah.
And again, you know, as we get older, we're trying to learn more about ourselves. And I'm grateful to Dr. Rodriguez at Humber in Toronto, who put me on a board, put me to sleep, took out both my hips and put in brand new titanium hips. And during the pandemic, without him, I wouldn't be able to do anything because I had two burned out hips. And because of it, he changed my life. I owe him a lot. Wow. All the work and study he did to do a double hip replacement in 3 hours and have me hitting golf balls 3 months later. And I fell in love with the game. And I got a great golfing buddy in Rod Black. He's got all the juice around Toronto and around.
We have a good time, man.
And I'm going to use him. I'm going to use him to get off his courses. I'm making it public, but I won't tell anybody.
Every time, anytime. And I can't wait to get down for it. I can't wait to see you and play golf soon.
Yeah.
So good to see you now. Super Bowl, you're picking.
You know, it's I'm going with the line. I mean, I'm not a betting man, but it's going to the last, it's going down to the last series. Philadelphia by a point. But if Mahomes has got the ball last, that'll be an issue.
Yeah.
That'll be an issue because he's almost impossible to stop in those situations. So John Gannon's got his work cut out for him. He's done a great job with great talent. Howie Roseman, phenomenal job on the general manager's side, putting this team together. And, you know, general manager's job is to get the team better every day. And there's no better example than what Roseman's done. And then Andy Reid and Vreach there in this quarterback, they just turn him loose. But they rebuilt their team, losing Hill. Added players. Spagnuolo's got a hell of a responsibility and a job ahead of him to stop the run, you know, because they're gonna try to pound him and keep the ball out of Mahomes' hands. Be fun. And let's play golf.
Super Bowl. This is football. It's game day. and Doritos. And you know, have some fun, maybe a couple of pops. I know taking away from your golf tee time, but I don't think you're done coaching. I just want to say that. Okay, I'll just say that right now. That's just me. I'm not a betting guy. Well, I'm a betting guy. And whether it's here in Canada, which I'd love. But you know where I think you would be actually very good? Just saying.
That's
just
not
just
happening.
Saying.
Kevin O'Connell is going to be there for a long time. Well, he's done a terrific job. You know, the game's changed. You know, I know we're digressing here, but the game is now controlled by the agents.
Yeah,
the agents, you know, I don't have an agent.
In every sport, every sport. Right.
The agents, I mean, there's guys who are getting fired who have no, you know, the tape would tell you they have no right to get a job, but the agent is the agent for the head coach on the other team, and the agent's going to put that coach together, even though on merit, the validity of the tape would tell you there's no way this guy should get another job because the tape doesn't lie. The tape tells you who are the coaches and who aren't the coaches. They always do. But the people making those decisions are listening to agents instead of looking at the tape. And there's a lot of young guys getting jobs. And I was young. So, I mean, when I was, you know, my first coaching jobs, I was in my 20s in the NFL and everybody else was in their 50s and 60s. Now there's very few in the 50s and 60s. They're all in their late 20s, 30s, early 40s.
You're seeing that all over sports. Coach, enjoy the day. Enjoy Super Bowl Sunday. Hit them straight. And great, as always, chatting with you.
Can I just say one thing? I am talking to a Hall of Fame sportscaster, personality, golfer, in my opinion, and honestly, the most charismatic and greatest human being there could be.
The kindest, giving, great
human being, and it's a privilege to have connected with you and do this today. And I hope we play a lot of golf in the days and years to come.
You got that right.
My brother.
You're going to bring a tear to my eye. I'll give you a hug. I can't give you a hug. I'll give you a hug next time.
Get down to Florida. Let's play. Come on,
man. Let's go, brother. Let's go. Thank you, Mark.
See you in the spring. You take care. Bye-bye.
Beautiful.
Bye-bye.
Those are very nice words from Mark Trestman. I didn't pay him, but I probably should. It's so cool to get to know him the last couple of years and get to really know the Mark Trestman. I remember as an announcer going into games in Montreal and then later in Toronto, and you'd sit down with them beforehand. And I won't say I was intimidated, but sometimes you don't want to ask that dumb question or stupid question, but you have to. That's what we do. And he's a thoughtful, insightful, intelligent guy. His football IQ is off the charts, and clearly he has been very successful. But I always found him very accommodating and very, very nice. Yeah, he is that guy on the sidelines that did look like an accountant or a professor that he really is right now. And we wish him the best, whether he is a football coach somewhere in the CFL or the NFL or the XFL, or perhaps he's just a life coach to people like you and me, because truly, Mark Trestman is a champion at that too. We hope you enjoyed this edition. Enjoy the Super Bowl, everybody. I got the Chiefs today. I might have the Eagles tomorrow. We'll see you Sunday, Super Bowl 57, and we'll see you next time on the Rodcast.
The Rodcast with Rod Black, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.